Step into our confessional. Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation. From Greatest Hits Radio, Simon Mayo's Confessions.
And you're very welcome. Welcome, congregation. And close the door as you come in. Matt won't let us have the heating on, so...
Quite right. No heating yet, because obviously it's still September.
Although...
strictly speaking, still summer, actually.
Well, it needs... No, it's not. It's autumn, which starts September the 1st.
I think it says British summertime on my watch. Not that I'm wearing a watch, but if I did...
Alan Partridge.
I do. Oh, my God. You're about 30 years too late for that party. That ship well and truly sold.
Anyway, what you don't know is that we've all got heating on. It's just your bit.
Oh, I don't doubt. I doubt my own heating is on right now, definitely. And it's turned off 10 minutes before I get through the door.
Sister Susan's in the pub where they don't actually have heating.
Yeah, that's true. It's
so
cold.
Brother Matt's just got a coat on.
Mm-hmm.
And Sister Holly is lurking as well from the tack cupboard.
Absolutely.
Where she's in charge.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't get the tat that you're expecting, you can get in touch with Holly.
Yes.
Right.
Later, we visit the parish notice board, add to the list of shame those confessions which were not suitable for broadcast, which I have to tell you is most of them. And you'll also get to hear this week's very fine confessions from the Drive Time Show on Greatest Hits Radio, including Anne's homework hoax, don't know much about geography, Alistair's prank call, I'm in love with my car, got a feel for my automobile, WizKid's confessions, tell me lies, tell me sweet little lies. But first, Travis has a security failure whilst trying to be James Bond. In his confession, living by numbers.
Simon Mayo's confessions. We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
Today's confession comes from Travis Arbuthnot, brackets, not my real name.
Oh, dear.
Just in case there was any doubt. Yeah. Simon and the assembled judiciaries, forgive me for I have sinned. I have carried this guilt for 36 years and I can do so no longer. My story goes back to 1988 and involves sensitive areas of military operations.
Mm.
For this reason, names and locations have been changed or omitted to protect the innocent. And more importantly, the guilty, which is me. At the time, I was an electronics engineer working in a civilian branch of Her Majesty's Intelligence Services.
Oh, wow.
Spy.
We don't get many
Thanks,
from the
Matt.
Intelligence Services, yeah, I have to say. I was very pleased to be chosen to go on an exercise somewhere south of the equator.
Okay.
That's vague. Half the world.
Nice. Yeah.
To assist in my agency's intelligence mission. This is fantastically vague. Our operation was based in a secure building guarded 24/7 by barbed wire and two armed sentries. Once we got past the security desk, we had to enter a combination into a combination lock to actually gain access to the building. Once inside the building, we then had to open a second combination lock in order to reach our inner sanctum. The combination was changed daily, and it was apparent to all that security was very tight. Apparent to all, that is, except me. I had grave concerns about these combination locks. They had five buttons labelled 1 to 5, but the combinations were only 3 digits long. Now, it doesn't take a genius to work out, therefore, that there were only 125 combinations. Fewer, in fact, because you couldn't push the same button twice in a row. But let's, for the sake of argument, say there were 125 combinations. I reckon I could type in 3 digits and then try the lock all inside of 2 seconds, 3 at the most. Again, simple maths will tell you I could try 20 combinations in a minute. Therefore, I could go through every single combination, I hope you're following this, in 6 minutes and 15 seconds.
Oh.
Using the law of averages, I also assume that the successful attempt would be somewhere around the middle of that. So these combination locks that were guarding so many restricted areas throughout all of the services could be beaten by sheer trial and error in 3 minutes. This seemed utterly preposterous to me, and I really couldn't believe that it was actually the case. But yes, my calculations were correct. The locks were not safe. As a conscientious young civil servant, I thought I should bring this to the attention of my superiors. I imagined them listening to my story with incredulity, and then me proving it to them in a live demonstration, at which point, amid gasps of astonishment, I would be profusely thanked for bringing this lapse of security to light, heartily congratulated for being vigilant and attentive to our country's security needs. Heads would no doubt roll in the security division, but for me, there would surely be medals. An MBE, I expected. I would be made senior security consultant with a 6-figure salary, no need to pop into work more than once or twice a week.
Yeah.
Mm.
I'm sure it doesn't end like this. I just needed to prove my theory to myself first. As luck would have it, there was another door in our inner sanctum that was protected by one of these five-digit combination locks. An ideal opportunity. At around 10:30 one morning, my two colleagues went for a coffee break, whilst I opted to stay in our ops room. Once they had left, I checked my watch, and as the second hand hit 12, I began my assault on the door. 1, 2, 3, check. 1, 2, 4, check. 1, 2, 5, check. I began going sequentially through every three-digit combination, excited at the prospect that at some point, the lock definitely would succumb to my onslaught. I was even going faster than 3 seconds per attempt. This was going so well. On about my 12th attempt, the door suddenly opened from the other side. There before me stood a tall, muscular-looking fellow in fatigues. He looked me up and down and then asked me what the devil I was doing. I've changed this slightly.
Devil.
At that precise moment, it suddenly dawned on me exactly what I was doing. I was trying to break into the SAS Communication Center. Yes, that SAS. Their room was a sanctum within a sanctum within another sanctum within a guarded compound, each sanctum protected by these five-digit combination locks. And I was trying to break into it. All notions of MBEs and tea with the Queen evaporated. My legs felt weak and I got that nauseous feeling that you get when you know you're in deep, deep trouble. The only head that would be rolling would be mine. However, the SAS chap listened to my garbled and panicked explanation before calling me a silly person and advising that I didn't do anything so flipping silly in the future. Advice I am pleased to tell you I took on board. So here we go. I need to ask forgiveness, not from the SAS chap, because he forgave me almost straight away. He had clearly dealt with idiots before. I ask forgiveness from Her Majesty's Armed Forces Security Agency, who selected these locks in the full knowledge that because multiple buttons can be pushed at once, a fact that I was unaware of, they actually offer up to 2,626 combinations.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I would like to thank the SAS man for realising that I was no master spy, simply a well-intentioned buffoon who had his nation's safety and security and his own medals as his motivation. I beg absolution from the panel and promise to be good from now on. I remain, sir, your long-standing follower since 1986 and Radio 1 days, in fact.
Ah.
Okay, well, that's very nice. Thank you for being there. That was the start of breakfast. Anyway.
Yes.
Travis is clearly a very wise and sensible person.
Mm.
But to try and break into an SAS strong room, I think this is sort of daft behaviour. Sister Susie, what do you say?
Well, I think Travis is very, very silly. It just wasn't his job, really, was it? He was an electronics engineer. He wasn't in charge of security or anything at all. And I hear you. If you have an issue, raise it. But the problem you went wrong is you weeded to prove your theory, and that's where I think your dreams of being James Bond kind of took over.
Yes.
And you should probably have just left it to the security people who obviously knew what they were doing. So I'm sorry, Travis, but I can't forgive you. You wasted some people's time and it was just a bit silly.
If Ben McIntyre is listening, he's got a new book about the SAS storming of the Iranian embassy.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
This is exactly the kind of contact that he needs.
Yes, he does.
An insider Travis Arbuthnot.
Quite right.
What do you say, brother?
I'm going to forgive. And the reason why is because I'm actually happy with this the outcome of this story, in that it sounds like the inner sanctum wasn't being protected by just a combination lock, which, frankly, combination lock, I was using that to lock up my grifter in the 80s. So I would hope that our security services would have something better than just the old combination lock there, and they've got something that's got 2,000 different sequences you have to you have to get through. So I'm definitely going to forgive. Who does wins a combination lock, and for that reason, I'm going to forgive.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
I mean, that was
it's a little obvious, isn't it? Matters thought, who does wins? That's the motto.
Here you pick up the crowbar.
Absolutely.
Prize that in.
Here he comes. Mm-hmm.
Travis's confession prompted some correspondence from someone called the Naughty Nurse.
Mm.
Dear Simon, Naughty Nurse would like to correct you. Travis's fantastic confession was definitely not the first involving a member of the SAS.
Oh, right.
Remember the one where he fell off the porter cabin roof trying to follow a student nurse, namely myself, into the nurse's home in Jersey?
Yeah, I do remember
that.
Thanks
to the Naughty Nurse. Actually, I do, yes.
Yeah.
I do remember that.
That was in the old place, wasn't it? That was from
the old
times.
No.
No, was it
here? Was it here? Mm-hmm. Oh, right. Okay, good. Even better.
I think he was kind of SAS, but I wasn't.
I think he was. He basically, we didn't think he was SAS because he kept saying that he was SAS.
Yes,
which is one way of weeding out the ones who aren't.
And he was all full of, oh look at me, I'm all
on top of a porter cabin.
Yes,
ugh.
But sadly, I can't even. Yeah, he couldn't even climb a drain pipe.
Couldn't climb a drain pipe.
So I think, Naughty Nurse, you're talking about fake SAS or someone who'd been kicked out the SAS. Failed to, you know.
Yes.
But anyway, thank you. And I'm glad, Naughty Nurse, you're still listening. Thank you very much. And your name implies that you have more to confess.
Mm.
So we would, thank you. Carry on again, confessions. Got Sid James in the corner there. Love I should it. Explain, Love Holly.
Sid James was a...
in the Carry On films of the 60s and 70s,
yes,
they had the same cast all doing ludicrous and usually suggestive things in kind of in a family-based comedy.
Somehow.
Yes, and Sid James was always one of the characters, so that was the reference.
Yes, I just need the reference to Sid James.
Did he have quite an extreme laugh?
We can all do the Sid James laugh.
Okay.
That's the joy
of that. Thank you. That was good.
Anyway, confessions at greatesthitsradio.co.uk. That would be great. And thank you, the Naughty Nurse, for getting in touch. Over to the parish notice board now. Matt, how are the reviews looking?
They are five stars. Five stars, says Derek Howson. Five-star holiday. Five stars are not enough for this podcast, he says. Brother Matt deserves more than that on his own. Before you add Simon and the sisters, I'm currently sitting by the pool on holiday, getting odd looks as I laugh along. I recently introduced my wife to the Confessions, and she's now an avid fan, and I'm in great trouble if I inadvertently release a spoiler before she hears it. Babsy 18911, definitely a bot. Love the Confessions. Love the podcast. Five stars. Your drive time confessions made my journey home from work so much easier, especially after a tough day in work and or when I was stuck in traffic. I'm over the moon that they're back, and especially the podcast as well, because I don't usually get to hear the Confessions during drive time anymore. I've been binge listening twice, and I'm telling everyone who would listen that Confessions are back. Thank you, Father Simon, Matt the Forgiver, as well as sisters Susie and Holly. Kiss, kiss, kiss. And finally, Creamy Bun Man.
Really?
Yes. Best podcast ever, five stars. I cannot believe how good this is. Matt is hilariously funny, and Sister Susie is extremely strict. When I found out this was back, I was overjoyed. It's the best thing ever. P.S. Matt for president. Quite right. And remember, if you want to get a shout out or nominate me for public office, even though I'm not qualified to be president, but you know.
President of what? We don't have president of the local Bold Society, maybe.
Well, I think we all know leader of the free world. That's where I'm going.
Is that a post?
Yes, it is.
You're
it is
not
a
American.
Leader of the free world. Yes, advertised. That's
traditionally the American president, and the last time I checked.
Well, I'm just
see you on the podium.
Waiting for the call. So do get in touch on the usual methods of the email. And all the socials. Leaving the five-star reviews. That's how we do it.
Okay.
You leave a five-star review wherever you get your podcast.
If you're looking at the transcription of this podcast, that sentence is the most ridiculous sentence of all time. Hey, we've been sent an interesting photo from Ray, which shows him very proudly showing off his mug.
Oh, yes.
What is that T-shirt you're wearing?
It's a motorbike, yes. Runaway something?
Rage, it says.
Runaway rage. What's what you've got on a motorbike?
I think it's stretched somewhat, and it now seems to be down to his knees, pretty much.
That's a long T-shirt.
Yes.
Yeah, good
anyway,
work.
Anyway, he says, hello, Simon, Holly, Matt, Susie, and a picture for the smug zone of the notice board. Thank you very much for the mug. It's in daily use. Thank you, Ray.
Is he holding a carrot?
That's his thumb.
Oh, right.
Sorry. He's giving a thumbs
it
up.
It does, but it actually, that's
it
an outsized.
Fair.
I think
it looks like a carrot, doesn't
it? It looks slightly too long.
I thought it was an in-joke.
Thumbs up.
I didn't quite get it.
I thought it was a carrot as well, but then it's an elongated thumb.
Good work on the thumb, Ray.
I'm just thinking maybe Ray...
Go to
the doctors and have a look.
Yes.
Say,
yes.
Is my thumb too long? Because they diagnosed this on the radio.
It looks like a carrot. So, sorry about that.
Old carrot fingers.
There
that's what they call red.
Yeah. Right, Ray.
Yeah, long T-shirt, carrot fingers.
Yeah.
So what correspondence have you selected from the post bag this week, Susie?
I've got this email from Theo, who says, "Dear Father Simon, Right Honourable Matt, Sisters Susie and Minister for the Interior of the Tack Cupboard, Holly. I've been meaning to write in for a very long time to say how much I enjoy the podcast. However, there's one particular section I enjoy the most. This is primarily due to mishearing the podcast about 5 months ago. Whenever Simon read out the stories from those slightly less virtuous people, I wasn't sure what the link to Dire Straits was.
What?
I thought you were calling it the Mark Knopfler broadcast."
The Mark Knopfler broadcast? The Mark not for broadcast.
With carrot fingers, Ray.
No, that's very good. Yeah,
it took me a week or two to figure out actually what you were saying, the marked not for broadcast. Anyway, this amused me and still does if I hear Simon saying this particular phrase. Personally, I think it could be a very successful rebrand. Mm-hmm. Thanks again for the great podcast. Could you please check with Susie and Holly if tat levels could stretch to sending me something? My student house is very sparse on mugs. Best wishes, Theo McCarthy in Durham.
Well, Theo, thanks very much for getting in touch. Yeah, student houses are notorious. I mean, when you say they're short on mugs, do you mean they just haven't been washed up? Or do you mean you've got very few mugs? Let me just check with Holly. Do we have a mug that Theo could have?
Absolutely. Yeah. We've got a Simon Mayo Drive Time mug looking great and sparkling and clean.
Okay. And then you send us a photograph, Theo, of you with the mug, a long T-shirt and a carrot.
And some root vegetable of your choice.
I think.
I'll make fun of you.
That's right. I think the Mark Knopfler broadcast section is...
Do you think that's what we should call it from now on?
I think definitely.
Yeah.
If you want to contribute to the Parish Notice Board, send it to confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk. And don't forget to send your confessions to that exact address as well, because if we use yours, you get a smart speaker. I think you all know that by now. A couple of mentions to Tracy Fry, Paul, Phil and Beaky29, who are among those who tweeted or blue-skied or maybe threaded a secret phrase from last week, which was, of course, a bit backwards in Australia, which had John and Russell get in touch to clarify. A bit backwards in Australia, I think... Not. We are actually 9 hours ahead.
Oh, yeah.
I joined Blue Sky solely to do this.
Just to send us up, right?
Yes. Is this where all the cool folks are? Can we have some tap, please? Your loyal fans, John, and Russell, on the New South Wales coast. I'm going to say certainly Blue Sky is where all the cool kids are going.
It's
very prestigious. Can we... Is there something we can send? I'm sure there is. If we don't tell management, just pop it in
just
the post.
Under the radar.
Or just don't include any postage and then they have to pay.
They have to pay it
when it arrives.
Genius.
There's a package for you. You've got to pay $21.
Yeah.
For a mug.
So
yes,
what do we
for a mug. Well, they'll have to email us.
Can we send them something less breakable?
Well, postcard?
There's a signed postcard of both you two, so we can send that over.
Send
maybe.
That. Brilliant.
Okay. We need their address, though, so that if they're listening, they'll have to email us their address, because they didn't put that on the Blue Sky.
Not that far ahead of us, then.
Yeah, okay.
As it turns out.
But anyway, John, and Russell, thank you very much indeed. So the catchphrase will be along a little bit later. Now, a dear from the Roll Call of Shame, the Mark Knopfler broadcast.
Oh, yeah.
First one comes from Eric. Eric, I understand you were only 14. You were in A&E with stomach pain. It must have been quite scary, but maybe when you didn't understand exactly what the nurse meant when she handed you a kidney-shaped bowl and asked for a sample, you should have checked, because it's at this point your confession takes a bit of a gross turn. See, you'd assumed that she meant a number two, and you went into detail as to how you managed to swirl your sample into the bowl like a Mr. Whippy.
Right, yeah.
And
hit
a bullseye that would have won you a speedboat from Jim Bowen that you proudly carried down the corridor and presented to the staff
before
you were told it was just a number one that was needed. Obviously, the gross term meant it's simply not suitable for tea time. It is a Mark Knopfler special.
Yeah.
And...
But surely the nurse should have said... The nurse would say... a sample of something. You've got to say what you're wanting a sample of. Because I would be wondering what exactly is am I putting into this?
Well, I'm afraid I'm not at liberty to tell you what the nurse did.
Well, as I'm going to say, I would have forgiven in that situation. I would have definitely forgiven.
No,
you
probably. Of
yes.
Anyway, maybe Eric just wasn't listening.
Could be true. He was over 14, wasn't he?
If you handed a kidney-shaped bowl, I would have thought it's a cardboard bowl, isn't it? If it's number
if it's
two.
Something, is it? I don't know. I've never handed one in.
Wow.
At the police station.
Yes. I've just found this. Is this it's in cardboard, is it? Lovely. In it comes.
No, I didn't want one of those. Okay, so Eric, sorry, you're not getting anything. And Stacey, we all know that some people just don't get on with their mother-in-law. But adding the dust from your foot hard skin remover into her special gluten-free gravy. she was round for Sunday lunch. Regardless of how horrible she was being to you, it is too disgusting for the radio. Though actually, I think if I'd seen it, I'd have probably read that one out. But anyway.
Yeah. And also probably improves gluten-free gravy, let's be honest.
Do you think?
Yeah.
What, have some... curls of
foot shavings,
skin.
Foot shavings, foot or shavings. Gluten-free gravy.
I think if we'd given a little warning, that would have been fine.
Yeah, would have been cool. Yeah, and forgiven as well, obviously.
No.
Yes.
Gross.
No.
Well, it might have been gross, but it would have been quite fun. Anyway, getting back to those that did make the cut, here's Anne's homework confession. Don't know much about geography.
Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation. Simon Mayo's Confessions.
To the business in hand, today's confession comes from Anne. Bless me, Father Simon, and the Synod of Redemption, for I have sinned. It has been many years since my last confession, and I am nearing the end of my career, and I feel it's time to own up to my sin from the past. It was the 1980s, the halcyon days of my youth, a time of new romantics, vinyl records, puffball skirts, no national curriculum, no Ofsted. I can tell she's an education.
Yes.
And long before the introduction of the internet, let alone the development of artificial intelligence with which to produce or just assist you with your homework.
Mm-hmm.
Not only did we have to handwrite our essays, but if we needed to research something, we'd have to visit a library and read an actual book. Okay. If we'd forgotten to visit the school library, we'd actually have to go into town and find the information that we needed, and no one had time for that. Looking back, with the benefit of hindsight, I can see that my geography teacher, let's call her Miss Johnson, was not long out of teacher training college and was maybe a little wet behind the ears. But I was a model student and never gave her any issues to doubt my integrity. Well, Father Simon, how wrong she was. We had been studying, I'm not sure why, the agricultural practices of different African countries, knowledge that as a teenager from the Midlands really felt a world away from the kind of things I really needed to obtain. Like, who fancied who, and what record was going to be number one in the charts that week? Consequently, I'd not really been listening in class and had certainly not bothered to go to the library or do some, shock horror, proper learning. Well, all teenagers will identify with this one, so it was that I found myself scratching my head slightly as it dawned on me that I had an essay due in the following day and hadn't a clue what to write. It was in this slightly perplexed state that my dad found me, staring at a blank piece of paper that evening. In his youth, he'd been in the Merchant Navy, was notorious as a man who never turned down an opportunity to make mischief. On one occasion, he managed to send a donkey up in a lift to the officer's ball and made himself scarce as it proceeded to run amok and fertilise the floor.
Oh.
Anyway, I digress.
Yeah.
Seeing my look of despair, my dad asked me what the problem was. I'm struggling with my geography homework, Dad. I don't know what to write. My dad, who was by no means an academic, but he had seen the world, he graduated from the School of Life and all that. However, I was a little bit surprised when he read the title of the essay and informed me this was easy. The title was, Why Do Tribes of the Maasai Mara Move Their Cattle in a Nomadic Way? I was more than a little surprised and extremely pleased that my dad was going to help me out. He said, as you know, I was brought up on a farm, and this is quite close to home. These farmers are subsistence farmers, he said. And the loss of a single cow can make the difference between life and death to their families. They therefore need to take every precaution to keep them healthy and to avoid one of East Africa's most dangerous hazards. If a cow is bitten by a certain insect, then the cow will go off its legs, and there is a good chance that it will not recover and die. The name of this most feared creature is the goosey-goosey fly, and it is the most dangerous animal in the whole of Africa. Forget the lion, forget the hippopotamus, forget the leopard. No, the most deadly beast on the continent is a tiny biting insect. It can be found near stagnant sources of water, so it's vital that the Maasai move their cattle on a regular basis in order to keep them healthy. If the fly bites, it'll inject a parasite into the cow's bloodstream, and the parasite could pass straight through the animal and then infect the others in the herd. My dad then went on to outline the life cycle of the goosey-goosey fly and how even drinking from infected stagnant water could be disastrous for the cattle and thus their farmers and the families. Well, I looked up, tears of gratitude in my eyes, having scribbled down his pearls of wisdom. Miss Johnson hadn't mentioned any of this information when she'd been droning on. How fortunate, I thought, that his extensive travels around the world and his farming background perfectly aligned just when I needed his knowledge the most. I managed to turn our chat into some sort of written format and I handed my homework in the following day. Grateful I dodged a bullet, I thought no more of farming techniques in Africa until the following week. And the next geography lesson saw our homework returned to us. Miss Johnson commented on each of my friend's efforts with levels of praise for some and exhortations to try harder for others. And then came the moment. "Anne, stand up," she said. "This girl has gone above and beyond the requirements of the course." I don't know why she spoke like a priest. Yes. Yeah. "She has researched this subject extremely well and I'm hugely proud of her work. A star."
Wow.
Wow.
"Father Simon, I suspect that this incident played a huge part in my decision to do A-level geography.
Oh.
I was by no means a natural in it, as shown by me scraping a pass at the end of sixth form. Probably this should not be much of a surprise, as the goosey-goosey fly does not exist, other than as a figment of my father's vivid imagination, as I'm sure you might have guessed. After being a head teacher of more than 20 years standing, I would like to seek forgiveness. Not from Miss Johnson, who really should have been more up to date with the syllabus that she was about to teach. Not from the Maasai tribesmen, who I doubt ever worried about the effects of the goosey-goosey fly, because there weren't any. But from my fellow classmates, who actually had done some notes and had taken some time to learn and go to the library rather than relying on their father's gift for generating mischief." Well, I kind of suspected that Anne was going to be a teacher of some kind, bearing in mind she was very strong about the curriculum and AI and teacher training college and that kind of thing. But anyway, well done to Anne's dad, the Goosey Goosey Fly, a fantastic bit of work. What do you say, Sister Susie?
I really like this, Anne, and there are a few reasons why. This kind of led to you to what you were doing now, and maybe if it wasn't for that story that your dad made up, maybe you wouldn't be in the career that you're in now. And isn't that an excellent thing? And I also like that your dad and you bonded over this too, and maybe I'm just feeling a bit soft today, but I think I'm gonna forgive you.
Okay. The Goosey Goosey Fly, very, very useful. Matt, what do you say?
Yes, clearly this is a confession before the days of Google, isn't it? Because obviously Anne would have gone, "Goosey Goosey Fly, let me look that up," and worked out it didn't exist. And Mrs. Johnson as well, she would have worked out it didn't exist. But the internet wasn't around. So my instinct is, it would be very easy to say, "Oh, Mrs. Johnson, she should have known." But my instinct is, Miss Johnson had to read so many very dull essays from everyone else in the class about why the nomadic tribes were nomadic. And finally, she gets one about the Goosey Goosey Fly. "I've never heard of that before. This sounds great. Let's give her an A star." So in that way, didn't everyone win? And actually, it turns out Anne wasn't very good at geography anyway. So she lost out at the end. So she shouldn't be punished twice.
So for that reason,
I'm going to forgive.
Okay, all right.
Something to confess. Simon Mayo's Confessions.
It's quite rare to get double forgiveness.
Yeah, that was quite a long verdict from me there, wasn't it? I was going on a while. I was going on quite a little journey there. Matt was loving it. I was throwing it out like freeform jazz. It's brilliant. Well done, Matt.
Matt was on a journey.
Wow. Well, yeah, A star. Well done.
That could have been edited down, really, to make Matt make more sense.
Yeah.
Anyway, here's a little sample of the people's verdict. We learned how most parents help with a bit of homework.
Vicky in Northampton, forgiven. Of course parents help with homework. As the owner of a PhD in geography, nothing's given me more pleasure than helping my daughters with assignments. Her year 5 project was judged of GCSE standard, and I'm certain that the teachers knew and appreciated the collaborative learning.
If you got a PhD, though, and you helped your kid and they only got to GCSE level, that doesn't sound very helpful.
Well, you've got to dumb it down a bit, haven't you? Because it can't be PhD level. Because then definitely they'll be asking questions.
Yeah, but I just think it's a little bit short-changed.
I like collaborative learning, though. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's school cheating, I think. Anyway,
I don't think so.
No?
No.
Did you cheat with your homework? This is just like last year, obviously, but... Did you
when
cheat?
You say cheat, what having?
I think
having
you know.
I think we all know what we mean, Holly.
Well, yes, my parents helped me at various points. Of course they helped me. Did you not help your kids with their homework?
But when you say...
So when your kids were like in tears over homework and you went, no, you deal with it yourself. Yep. This is character building.
Yep.
Wow.
That's
Your parents said, life. No, I'm going to write it for you.
They didn't write it for me. They just sat with me and then, you
and
know.
Dictated it.
Yes.
Yeah. We've learned a lot there. Still to come on the podcast, Alastair gets his own back on a Scottish-hating person called Mr. B with a prank that goes maybe a little bit too far. But not before WizKid's confession, tell me lies, tell me sweet little lies.
Shh, shh, shh. We won't tell anyone.
What's your secret? Confessions at greatesthitsradio.co.uk.
Father Simon and the Fearsome Three. With the summer season drawing to an end at about now, I thought I might recall my end of summer tale too. And being one of your youngest confessors for a while, being only 16, you might be interested that the youth still get up to mischief. I think we knew that.
Yeah. Anyway.
Firstly, you must understand that my family is built on lots of laughter, many jokes, and a fair few funny ideas. And this is the time that one of these crazy ideas that we came up with was actually carried out. Secondly, me and my family live on the South Coast, and we've lived there for decades, and for the first 10 years of my life, spent many a time in Portsmouth. Our summer holidays every year have consisted of taking the Channel ferries to France or Spain out of the harbour. The open decks of the ships that travel in and out, one of the best ways to see the sights of the city. One year when coming back from holiday in Brittany, I found myself on my own on the top deck, staring out towards the city. I noticed an oldish-looking couple, maybe in their 40s.
So old.
Oldish.
Yeah. Imagine. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Leaning on the railing and staring out too. Then I overheard them discussing, what do you think that is, when pointing at the ancient gunning posts from Henry VIII's reign? Being 11, I immediately decided I should be the one to step in and put them right. Uh-huh. Hello there. I squeaked.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about Portsmouth?
Wow.
Okay, I'll lose that. That'd be annoying.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Let me tell you about this great city, I said. Their faces changed. This couple now seemed keen to listen. I proceeded to tell them about Southsea Castle, the Spinnaker Tower, famous historic Docklands, their naval importance, quoting mildly interesting facts about various past wars and their current significance with the British Navy. I got quite into it, and being quite a nerdy 11-year-old boy, the poor old couple may have been starting to regret their choice to stand next to me. Anyway, the couple told me eventually that they had to go and they wished me goodbye and thanked me for their amazing tour of Portsmouth. My dad was standing just behind me and congratulated me on giving a tour to these folks. He joked that I should have charged them and we went back inside, full stop.
Full stop.
Skip forward a few years and our family, me now 14 years old, my sister, mum and dad, were all going back on holiday to France on the same ferry. We'd all theorised ways to make our holiday funnier. Now, this is where I have to say these are all daft ideas. Wearing fake moustaches to passport control, for
don't
example.
Don't do that.
I mean, you
can't do that. Goodness.
You get arrested. Putting on strange accents to confuse the French. Well, that's okay.
Yeah.
My dad reminded us of when I toured that couple around the city from the boat. He suggested doing it again. However, this time, throwing in a few fake facts.
Ah.
Not enough to look like an idiot, but enough for it to seem believable when merged with real facts. On our return ferry, coming into Portsmouth, therefore, at the end of this holiday, on the top deck of the ship, whilst my family watched on in the distance, I walked the length of the ship looking down the line of tourists, wondering which lot would be gullible enough. Eventually, I found myself standing next to a mother and her teenage son. They were having a similar conversation to the previous time. What's that thing with the flashing lights? Do you think that it's a fun fair or some brightly coloured market? I judge this is my time to strike. Do you know anything about Portsmouth?
Voice had broken.
I know, I'm 14.
Yeah.
No, we're on holiday from the Midlands, the woman exclaimed in her heavily accented voice.
Oh,
but not
really?
By me.
Oh, right.
We don't know much about Portsmouth. Well, I breathed a huge sigh of relief. Well, would you like me to explain what is what? I replied. And I pointed back right out to sea and to where the lights were. Well, that is Clarence Pier. The only pier, I said, made of balsa wood in the world. Then there's the amusement arcade on the seafront where you can still win a chicken.
Win a chicken.
And also one of the few wimpies left in the UK where if you go dressed as a sausage, you get a free fizzy drink.
Okay.
Well, the mother and son looked at each other. Then the mother started remarking on wimpy and their favourite dishes. And then when passing a seafront pub, I said, and that pub over there is, according to legend, Charles Darwin's favourite pub, and his favourite chair is still there as well, where he wrote On the Origin of Species. This, of course, wasn't true. Charles Darwin never lived in Portsmouth. I meant to say Charles Dickens, who did live in the town but moved before his third birthday, so he hadn't really found his favourite pub yet. A few hundred metres later, I said, and behind that hotel is the private gym where Arnold Schwarzenegger trained for several of his film appearances in the UK. Oh, which ones, they said. Unfortunately, I don't really know, but definitely all the Terminator films.
Oh, all of them, yeah.
And the Expendables, which was inspired by a night out in Plymouth. I thought I was going to get away with all my lies, but just then the father of the family arrived, and let's just say he knew his stuff. However, like a school kid saved by the bell, the tannoy came on and it told us that all the cars had to be filled with their owners because they were about to disembark. I hastily made my apologies to the family for having to leave, and the family thanked me for their wonderful tour of Portsmouth. I have attempted to repeat this at various points in recent years, but none of them have had the same success.
No, no.
So I suppose I have to seek forgiveness from these people that I so convincingly duped. I recognise it probably wasn't a clever idea to tell fake facts. If they're listening to this, I'm sorry to the family for my deception. But at least my family found it very funny. Well, I mean, I think this is all fine and good and so on, apart from putting on a fake moustache, going up to passport control.
No, don't do that.
Which
no.
almost, I'm sure, will be illegal. Yeah. Anyway, let's check in with Sister Susie, first of all, producing the show today.
Yes. Well, WizKid, yes, definitely don't wear a moustache when you go to passport control. That would... not funny.
Unless you're six, I suppose, in which case it's obviously a joke.
Yeah. Okay.
No, maybe
I still wouldn't do it. I like that you've confessed and you're only young. However, I do feel like you're a bit of a prankster, and the fact that you've tried this number of times, I just find you a little bit annoying, maybe. And mainly because you called a couple of 40 old. So for that reason, I'm not going to forgive.
Brother Matthew.
Yes, teenagers all pretty annoying, Leo. I think we can all agree on that. So I'm going to forgive. Just because I love all the little facts that he came up with. They're all pretty good, weren't they? You know, pier made of balsa wood. I mean, who's going to believe that? If you're believing that, then obviously it's your fault for being a little bit thick. And also, I'd like to go to an amusements where you can win a chicken. I would definitely go to an amusements where you win chickens. So for that reason, I'm going to forgive.
Confess All. Simon Mayo's Confessions Podcast.
Another smart speaker to be handed out, this time to Alistair. Who says, Father Simon and the Confessional Collective, I hope to be safe from any future court proceedings.
Hopefully.
Or well, prosecution, yes. As this story dates back to the naughty 90s. Was that a thing?
No, it wasn't.
It's also not that long ago.
No, it was not.
The person concerned may have passed away to another world, or at least not care anymore.
Okay, again.
Okay.
A degree of some uncertainty, I think, here. My story starts when I worked as the overseas sales rep for a removals company at its Edinburgh depot. We had a regular annual audit from the head office, which was based in Enfield, down there in London. The accountant who was posted to us for the week was a Mr. B. We're just going to call him Mr. B, who was frankly, a morbid man and also a Scottish hater. And he wasn't too happy about being posted to Scotland for the week. I suspect that's probably why they did
it. Wow.
Who doesn't like going to Edinburgh? I know, yes. Mr. B, let's send him there to do the annual audit. So on Monday morning, Mr. B arrives along with his black BMW 323i. Hello. He parked his car in front of the storage warehousing, which was against the company's unwritten rule of never parking on the forecourt of the warehouse, as it was needed 24/7 for loading vehicles. Mr. B, who knew this, had recently opted out of the company car scheme and was overly very proud of his car, as he had paid extra for his BMW 323i.
Okay, I think we all know things are going badly for the 323i, aren't
think?
They? Yeah.
When a visiting HGV driver...
There it is.
...entered our reception asking who owned the car parked on the forecourt, Mr. B jumped to his feet and said, "Is that the black BMW 323i with all the extras?" "Yes," replied the angry driver. "Move it." You can tell I'm doing all the accents today.
Yeah, you are.
Same to happen on Tuesday. Same happened on Wednesday and by Thursday, the office, but mainly me. We were absolutely furious with Mr. B. We could not stand him anymore, and so I hatched my plan. I went to another office and I phoned Mr. B's desk. And then I put on a different voice.
Really? But for the... I wonder whether it was a Cockney voice. Let's find out.
Well, no. Well, you'll see why it can't be.
Okay.
So I'm saying here, you're a hard man to track down, said Sergeant Hamish MacLeod. That's
right.
That's me. To Mr. B. I'm calling as we, that's the police, the local police, obviously the Edinburgh police.
Yes, yeah, so yeah, yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Have been notified by DVLA of your recent purchase of a BMW 323i. Could you come down, please, to the nearest police traffic office to have the vehicle seized as evidence in the future trial? What trial? Screamed Scottish-hating Mr. B. Well, Sergeant Hamish MacLeod explained that his car is what they call a cut-and-shut, meaning it is two written-off cars welded together to make an illegal new vehicle. Well, it was a busy afternoon, and I forgot to tell Mr. B about this prank call. But we did have a good old laugh that night in the pub. I don't think you had any intention of telling him at any stage. No. Friday morning came. Mr. B pulls up to the office in a clapped-out Ford Escort banger. Upon further questioning, Mr. B explained the previous day's phone call, and he mocked the police that he was not going to hand over his beloved BMW 323i for free. So, said Mr. B proudly, he had taken his BMW to the local Kinross car market and had it auctioned the previous evening. But he'd lost many thousands of pounds and could only afford this car, the clapped-out one. But still, he'd beaten the police and he'd saved some money in the end. Mm. Well, sorry not sorry to have pranked you, Mr. B, but you had it coming and I duly delivered. However, I did receive free tickets to attend Simon Mayo's Confessions TV show on the BBC in 1997, but I smelt the setup and I declined.
Right.
Curses. Curses. We'd have had you good and proper. Anyway, but now is the time to clear my conscience and ask for the British people's forgiveness at this anorak of a man. Well, we could have got you on the television a long time ago, but no, Alistair has finally decided that now is the time, to confess everything, that it was indeed him who, I mean, this has cost Mr. B a lot of money. I mean, thousands of pounds worth of money, although he did take the mickey out of the Edinburgh police. Let's check in with Sister Susie.
Do you know what? I was on his side for a little while of that. You know, I don't think it's very nice to hate Scottish people, so Mr. B didn't sound very nice,
he didn't.
I was nearly there. However, I'm just not a fan of pranks. And I just think that he didn't really want forgiveness, did he? And no. I just don't think he had any intention of admitting to what he did either. And I think for that reason, I can't forgive him, even though I kind of understand why he did it.
I think he's quite pleased with this prank, even if he didn't get to confess to it on national television. Anyway, brother from another gutter.
Yes, he should have come on the telly, really, shouldn't he? But I'm going to forgive. And here's why. Because Mr. B was flouting the rules, wasn't he? Yet another one of these officials up high in companies who think they can flout all the rules. Well, not this time. And also, he thought he was going to diddle the police out of the money for the car, didn't he? Well, no, because karma came for you, Mr. B, in the form of a BMW 323. Which you were obviously very attached to.
The karma ran over his dogma.
Very good. Well done. So for that reason, for that pun, I'm going to forgive.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
I think you were going to forgive anyway, whether or not.
I thought it was a good pun.
Alistair should have confessed a little bit earlier, but anyway, he did come clean in the end. Maybe this week's confessions have brought back a few memories for you, and maybe there's something that you need to ask forgiveness for. If you do, send it to confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk. If you're desperate for something from the tack cupboard, Holly is feeling very kind of amenable.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Just pop in a little email. And
we haven't got a lot of tack at the moment, but there's quite a few Ken Bruce photos.
Yeah, I could turn that off. I mean, it's fine. It's not as good as, like, the signed pictures of you, but obviously if we're running out of those, then...
No. I'll get Ken to sign a few.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
Anyway, Brother Matt's going to choose this week's secret code phrase.
Yes, and the secret code phrase this week is Carrot Fingers Ray. Carrot Fingers Ray is what you need to put on your message.
If you've listened this far, you can tweet me at Simon Mayo. You can... thread me at Mr. Simon Mayo and on Blue Sky.
Blue Sky.
Where the cool kids hang.
Yeah, I mean, the number of times we mentioned Blue Sky, are there figures going up yet?
I don't know.
Double figures yet of people on Blue Sky? Surely must be soon.
There are more people that comment on the podcast on...
on Blue Sky?
Usually the, wow. Usually the first people to send in your catchphrase are, yeah,
are
usually
on Blue Sky. Well, bless them. I love the people on Blue Sky.
Anyway, so send that in and tell everybody to follow, like and subscribe. That's a very good thing. Keep telling everyone about the Confessions podcast, which is back. Until next time, Sister Holly says...
goodbye.
Sister Susie says...
goodbye. Oh, sorry.
Goodbye and sorry.
Yeah, goodbye. Oh, sorry.
I interrupted you. I thought...
No, you didn't. You came in perfectly spot on.
Okay, I quite like a goodbye and a sorry, Matt.
Yeah, no, no. Goodbye and a sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much for listening.
Simon Mayo's Confessions. Want to confess? Simon Mayo would love to hear your story. He may even keep it to himself.
He definitely won't keep it to himself.
Send gory details, please, to confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm more sorry than anyone. I'm the most sorry.
Matt's not sorry at all.